Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome to another episode of Small Doses Podcast. Before we get into the episode, I want to remind y'all that your girl is back on the road. You can check me out in Chicago, Illinois on January 19th and 20th. Make sure that you get your tickets at amandaseals.com. I'll also be hitting up Dallas, Baltimore, Stamford, Connecticut, and more. You don't want to miss out. So you can also go to amandaseals.com and sign up for my newsletter so that you are in the know when I have a show. Last but not least, also got to remind y'all, we need to get these subscriptions on YouTube up because they was trying to play with your girl and stall me out, and we got to say, the people are here. So when you get a chance, go to youtube.com and go to Amanda Seals TV. Hit that subscribe, like, comment, all that good stuff. You know we've got the visuals for this podcast over there. So it's not even the same experience. You know what I'm saying? Like, you listen to it here and then you're like, wait a minute, I need to see the face she made when she said that. Well, maybe we got it for you. So go to YouTube, Amanda Seals TV. All right, let's get into this next episode.
Self-help from the hip.
Small doses.
We're talking that shit.
Small doses.
And keeping it real.
Small doses.
With me and Amanda Seals.
It's so funky. Welcome to another episode of Small Doses Podcast. Today.
So official.
Today we are here to discuss. Kindness.
Kindness.
With an ambassador of kindness, Yvette Nicole Brown.
It's Muppet, yeah.
And I really feel like, you know, your character on Community was like the epitome of...
I mean, shady kindness. She was surely wasn't all the
Shirley was all the way kind?
She was. I mean, I think she thinks that she was, but she had a little bite. She was a little nice tea, a little bit.
Are we
allowed to talk about shows?
We're not promoting it. It's not even on air anymore.
That's true. What were you supposed to say? Nothing about it. Do I think that I'm nice to you in real life?
Yeah.
No. I'm actually really kind. I will, though. I'm from East Cleveland. So I have to...
I will cut you.
I will cut you. Now, this is
I was going to say, because I think nice to you is like... It's like you can't be kind and nice.
No, nice to you is you're not nice. If you're nice to you, you're a mean person trying to pretend to be nice. We all know... people like that.
I do.
We both do. So that's not good. No, but if you're nice, but honest and to the point, like my thing is you don't get the fever unless you deserve the fever. And even if you get the fever, it's going to be not precious. Now look, my mother don't come at mother like that. My mother loves you. Don't,
right.
Hey, watch your tongue. It'll be that. It'll be the Tabitha Brown type of gathering and not the, you know.
I appreciate also that Tabitha Brown's type of gathering has become like a branded type of gathering.
Her gathering is, and listen, there's a bit, I'm not going to say it's not on purpose, but it's a bit of a curse in her gathering. When she gathers you, your life going to change. And not in a good way, because if you have to get gathered by Tabitha, you have done something.
Fair.
She's not just gathering people. She's gathering the people that need to be gathered, and she's raising those that weren't raised correctly by their mamas. And she just, come over here. Let me go and give you a little something, help you on your way. But there's a bit of a curse, a blessed curse. But she
a blessed curse.
So bless it.
Now, you had hit me and you were like, I want to do small doses. I'm like, it's overdue anyway. Yes.
I meant to bring my book for you to sign. Doggone, I knew I forgot something.
It's all good.
It's not like I don't see you around.
I was going to say.
I see you around with a shotgun.
We have access.
Yes.
But my question to you is, you specifically asked about doing side effects of kindness.
Yes.
What is it about this topic that spoke to you?
You know, I think that the world is mean. And I think we're becoming meaner. And I think that it is okay to chase your dreams and be all that you want to be, but you don't have to shank people as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important to, especially with you, with the platform you have, to talk about it's all right to be nice to people and take care of people. We ain't got to be so hateful.
At this point in the show, I'm going to play this clip from Dr. Cornel West, who is running for president. That's not what this is about. But he has this quote about James Baldwin that I want you to hear right now.
We know here's somebody who's committed to intellectual integrity, committed to a moral honesty. You remember he says at the end of Notes of a Native Son in the introduction, all I ever want to be is an honest man and who, like Hemingway, endures in my work. Now, you see, in an age of mendacity and criminality, which is our own, just telling the truth and having integrity is revolutionary. It's subversive. It's countercultural. So Baldwin comes back bringing this rich tradition of eloquence, truth-telling, witness-bearing, soul-stirring writing.
Basically, the clip is, in this world of mendacity, mm-hmm. which is meanness, mm-hmm. he says, you know, it is revolutionary to choose kindness. Mm-hmm. And that James Baldwin was somebody who chose kindness and love yeah. for his people. So that's the quote. So
I love that you defined mendacity for me, because this is the thing. Some of your words you do need to define. I didn't know what that was. But there's some. I'm like, where is the source of addiction? What did Amanda say?
Well, I just think that it's really true that there is something revolutionary to choosing kindness.
Yeah, because I think that people believe that kindness equals weakness, and no yes. one wants to be seen as a weakling. So when you choose kindness, now they're wrong.
Right.
They're wrong.
Yeah.
But they believe that it means that if you're a pushover or whatever. So for someone to boldly go out and go, no, I'm going to take care of people and I'm going to make sure everybody's all right and I'm going to be outward facing instead of inward facing, mm-hmm. I think that is revolutionary, and I think it'd be better if more people did it.
I think it'd be better as well if more people like yourself, you know, took the time to qualify it as not weakness.
Right.
You know, I think there's something to be said for meanness actually being the true definition of weakness.
I heard this recently. I don't know who said it, but it was something, I'm paraphrasing. You can tell the strongest person in the room because they're the quietest. Usually when people come in with a lot
you
of-
You saw that-
Where did I see it?
You saw, someone said that as a speech at a commencement speech at Brown University.
There it is. I posted it too. That's where I got it from. And I agree with him because I feel like the people that come in with all the bluster-
The gregarious.
Look at me and I'm here. You know, there's a difference. Like, gregarious is nice. If you're coming to make sure everybody has a good time, that's mm-hmm. great.
Okay.
But when you're coming in trying to suck the air out of the room because you need everybody to think you're the most important,
yes.
that's a sign that you feel very small. If you can enter a room and just quietly sit down and enjoy the ambiance without needing to be that person, mm-hmm. that's a sign of strength. And it's the same thing with kindness. Like the people that are, what does the Bible say? The meek shall inherit the earth. The people that can come in and be like, how you doing? Mm-hmm. And not look at me! What is the look at me?
Insecurity.
Yeah.
But then how does that apply to the meanness part of it all? Because I think when we talk about the meanness thing, I think that it's become almost like sexy. It's like fly. I feel like I saw an article the other day that said, has America gotten more rude? If you think so, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. But they cited it as a result of the pandemic.
Absolutely not. Listen, we can get political because you and I can do that. We don't have to.
Why wouldn't we?
I feel like this started, but he brought it back when Donald Trump came. When he got to the point where he decided that there were no norms, the name calling, all of that. And I think weak people believe that bluster and insults, the sign of a strong man. But yeah, it is a strong man, the type of autocratic, strong man, authoritarian mm-hmm. figure. The Hitlers, the Putins, these are not the people that you should emulate or admire. But the people that are weak and feel small saw this also small man blustering and calling people names. He's a very small man in a lot of ways. They said in body parts are small. There's a lot of stuff small about that man.
His little tiny hands.
Little mouth. Other small people saw him as a small man and thought, well, look at him, this guy. That's what we have to do. We have to be hateful and nasty. Mm. When I look at what's happened to Congress... When I look at what's happened to Congress, it breaks my heart. These used to be people that we admired and looked up to and thought
that... I don't know that I ever admired and looked up
to them. Back in the day?
No.
Oh, I used to always think that Congress people had their...
You can say whatever the fuck you want to say, but is it that you thought that they did, but now you know better? Because
yes,
they've never
absolutely.
Had their shit together.
Absolutely, now I know better. The thing is, I used to think as a kid in East Cleveland, I saw politics and... all of that mm-hmm. as lofty goals and dreams. And you had to be a better person, a smarter person, a kinder person to be elected and to, because I thought you were doing it because you cared about people.
Yeah, I know.
Right? And what we've learned in the last 8 years for sure mm-hmm. is that that's not the case. They're in it for the money. They're in it for the power. They're in it for the wonderful healthcare that they don't want anyone else to have.
Right.
These are the things that they're in for. And so once I realized that, it broke my heart because I'm like, why are horrible people deciding what happens to the rest of us? And that's why I've been telling people now, beyond just saying you should vote, I'm now telling people you should run. If you are a decent person who cares about other people, please run. I don't care what you run for. Just run for something.
I mean, that's the start of my documentary of In a Man to Be Trust.
Which I love.
Oh, thank you. It's just this concept of like, do not consider these people to be more elevated
Absolutely.
Than you. Absolutely. You know, more experienced than
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
In some cases, they may be.
Yeah.
But for the most part, politics at this point doesn't have any guardrails.
None.
Other than, do you got money?
Yep.
That's really the guardrail.
Yep. And I mean, they gerrymandered all these different cities and areas. So they're picking their voters now.
Yes.
So now we're stuck with, because, you know, we didn't need the Voters Voting Rights Act. Why do we keep that? Let's get rid of that.
It's a very interesting way, though, to bring kindness into this, though, because I really feel like when people talk about like, oh, I don't want to vote. I don't care about voting. Voting doesn't matter. I think that there's a departure from kindness that is required for you to feel that way.
Absolutely.
Because you have to know that voting, both on a federal and local level, is going to affect the greater
yep.
good.
But you have to care about other people,
yes.
right? Because this is a thing I used to always talk about, and I still talk about this. I don't have kids, but anytime something comes up for school boards, I vote for it. Like if it's more money
okay.
for schools.
Yes.
Because it's not about me. It's about
everybody.
When student loan forgiveness came, I paid off my, I don't even know how I did it when I think back, I don't know how I did it. But I paid back my student loans when I was in my 20s. I don't have a problem with other people getting them
Say
forgiven.
Say that, please.
My God, this is great. I hope everybody gets them forgiven because it's some bullshit. So I don't understand the idea of, but I've never believed in, I've got mine, you get yours. I've always believed that I am my brother's keeper. I believe when
Where did that come from for you?
My mom. My mom raised me and my brother to be the helpers. Mr. Rogers always talked about being
yeah.
one of the helpers.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been one of the helpers. If something is going down, I'm in the room like, how can I make this better?
Mm-hmm.
If I enter a room, a situation, go to an event, how can I be of service here? It's never look at my outfit. It's never look at me. It's
mm-hmm.
like, who in here needs me? When I'm on a set, I'm like, needs me.
Hmm.
And I'm there as a, if I book a job as an actor, I believe I'm there as a respite. I'm there as a safe place for people to land. And I just sit there and then I look and I go, okay, let me go talk to Sally. Sally's having a day. And I go, girl, what you doing, girl? What's going on with you?
Wow.
I was at this event at, went to the VP's hip hop event last week. And there was a little baby girl named Patrice. We got there early. All of us are there milling around. A lot of people came with people.
Mm-hmm.
And this little baby, she's probably in her early 20s, was sitting by herself. And I noticed that no one was talking to her. No, and I said, is it Precious? What is your name?
Precious.
She said, Patrice. I said, well, Patrice, I'm going to call and sit with you.
This how accent.
You I said, it's Cleveland, girl. It's Cleveland. Cleveland's country. I said, baby girl, let me go and sit with you. I said, how you doing? She said, I'm fine. And I could tell like her little spirit got lifted because no one had spoken to her. But I'm going to go in a room and find the person mm-hmm. that no one's speaking to. Because
why wasn't anyone speaking to her?
I just think they were with their friends.
Oh,
they're
got you.
Moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was, you know, she came by herself. And she was just happy to be there and got her
Shout
little
Shout out to Patrice
seat.
Coming by yourself.
Shout
sometimes
out to
you got to roll by yourself.
I'm almost always by myself.
Famously
I'll
by
roll,
myself,
I will
yes.
roll through anywhere. I'll go to
yes.
eat, go to movies, go to VP's
I
house
I bought my
by
tickets
myself.
To Usher. I
Come
will be
on.
There by
go
myself.
Go by yourself. Go and let them sing to you. Girl. Go on, get up in there and dance a little
I'll
bit.
Be your groovy.
Hey!
Ow!
Yeah,
there'll be no one to text about it or to tweet about it. There'll be no one to tweet about it.
I'll tweet about it. I'll see you.
But you won't say, but you're a mom, though.
I won't say that.
But you're a dog mom, though.
You're a dog mom. It's the outfit for me. Because you're a dog mom.
And I will be wearing a very pink outfit.
Just get up in there. We need this. Go on and have your mom. I want everybody to have their mama with Usher.
I don't believe for any second, any stretch of time that Usher is going to sing to me. But I will be singing back to Usher.
Sing to
you? I'm not famous enough, but I'll sing to Usher.
Are we doing this?
I'll be your groupie, baby.
Are
you
we
know
doing
when,
this?
When people be doing the video.
This is a commercial for him to see. Let's Usher sing that. Amanda. Sing to Amanda when she comes. Go on, tell him. Go on, put it, get in the DMs. Tell him what seat you in. Tell him put a spotlight on you. Go on, get your moment.
You know, y'all, please.
Get your
please.
Come on,
please.
Usher. Usher, please. Give her a moment.
I've never met Usher.
I met Usher once. I think I embarrassed myself. I saw him at the Voice. I don't have a problem embarrassing myself either because ego, there's no ego resides in this body.
Gotcha.
This body is like,
yep.
I don't do it. So I'll go up to anybody. If I love your work, I will go up to you and tell you. And if you're kind, we'll have a moment. If you're not,
mm-hmm.
I'll be like, God bless. And I leave.
Right.
But yeah, I went up to him and I was like, I love you. I think you're just amazing. I love you. Since you're a little boy. Since you're a little boy.
These
singing your songs.
Yes.
And he was like, okay,
okay.
Ma'am.
Okay,
thanks, ma'am. Okay.
He turned his chair back around.
He was like, he was very nice. I'm kidding. He was really nice, but I was a goober, so whatever.
A goober.
I was a goober.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. So you were raised this way. I mean, there's something very real about simply just that, right?
Yeah.
Like that there's a conditioning of kindness.
Yeah.
And how that has to be conditioned yourself if you didn't come up in it.
Yeah, I just feel like, listen, and I feel like some people just come here caring about others and some people come here caring about themselves.
Isn't that interesting?
Is it
like in the DNA?
It's kind of in the DNA. Like there's something.
Is it necessary that it's that way? Like a yin yang?
I had someone say to me once, and this broke my heart. I was working on a set and it was a season of a show. And by the end of the season, one of my castmates said, "You're really nice." And I said, and she was like, "I don't know how to do that." And I was like,
"I."
And
too,
she was right. She did not know how to do
I
it.
I too have had a similar.
She did not. And I was like, "Well, you just look out for people. Just care about others the way you care about you."
Do they care about themselves? See,
ooh,
this is the, because that's the other part. I
now
think that there's.
It.
You know, kind of like doing things to advance like yourself in terms of accomplishment,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily like loving yourself and advancing your character. That's a different exercise.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine, shout out to Mac, and he said something the other day. He's like, "You know, Amanda, you a good person. So I'm glad you happy because good people deserve to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Hard workers deserve to make money.
Yep.
Good people deserve to be happy. Just because you're working hard don't make you a good person. And just because you're a good person don't mean you're working hard."
Dang, I'm like, I need a diagram. Where's the syllabus?
Listen.
Carry the 2 minus 5.
I have a whole list of Mackisms.
Is Mac online? Because I need to follow that.
Another famous Mackism is, "Shame on your parents for how they did you back in the day, but shame on you for staying that way."
There it is, though. There it is.
Another classic, "There's only victims and volunteers." That's the one that
is Mac
you.
Online. I gotta follow.
He is
Mac.
Not,
Mac,
but that'll get you in your neck.
Yo,
there's only victims and volunteers,
ooh.
And at a certain point, you ain't the victim no
you
more,
ain't the
baby.
Victim. I just told a friend that too. I told a friend going through a breakup. So I don't know if they're breaking up or not. I don't know what's going on, but I told him. I said, "Listen, there's only so many times if you're gonna keep eating poison. There's only so many times I can pump your stomach.
It's just
after a while, I have to assume
you
that you
like
want
it.
To take."
Yeah.
The poison. And then I'm going to leave you to it. You enjoy that toxic.
Because I don't want to get in the way.
I don't want to stop you from drinking your poison. So go on, go keep going back to that foolishness. So yeah, and at a certain point, you can't blame the other person after a while. It's you, because you keep going back.
And you'll tell yourself, I'm going back because I'm a kind person. No, I'm giving this person grace.
No. You got to be kind to yourself too. You got to put your own oxygen mask on first. And you know, if somebody is intent on destroying you, stealing your joy, murdering your spirit, friend, family, lover, get out of there.
The thing about it, though, it brings us back to the young lady who said to you, like, how do you do that? I really think there are a lot of people who simply feed off of negative, mm-hmm. and it's related to trauma that they experienced when they were younger. So yeah. chemically, it is feeding them. Yep. It's an addiction.
Yep.
And so they will create that, you know, like there would be times with my ex where it's like we had so much joy, mm-hmm. but you still felt compelled to try and create an argument yeah. because it was like you couldn't
just, abide in the joy.
You couldn't. You yeah. couldn't because you needed that to kind of just like feel comfortable. And that's right. unfortunate, right?
It is. It is.
And when you see that, you're like, damn, that sucks for you that you have to have this like turn of events right. in order for you to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, they just simply feel more comfortable in discomfort, which yeah. is then transferred onto you.
Yeah. I think also if you as a child did not get what you needed, and you wanted things and you needed things and you didn't get them, I think at a certain point, you stop dreaming that it's possible for you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get into a relationship with someone that is giving you the love that you never got, in your mind, this is not going to last. So let me torpedo it before it dies.
Ba-dum-bum.
Don't do that. And it's sad. And this is why I tell everybody.
Well, you know, that's what narcissism is.
Absolutely. My whole thing is find a therapist. Get on some meds. Talk to somebody.
So you know what? That second part is a part that's really tough for some people. You know,
get on meds?
Yeah, because in their minds, it's like, it's because it feels like asking for help or it feels like needing something. And I think we're getting much better at getting over the stigma of therapy. But, you know, some people need meds. If you didn't get what you needed, you may need something to help your brain get into the space.
I tell everybody, I have diabetes. And so I'm on metformin for my diabetes. I thank God it's not insulin. But if it was insulin, I'd be taking that too.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing. This is a computer. This is a machine that was yeah. made at various factories. Some of the factories were eating their bananas and whatever. Some of the factories were smoking Pall Mall. So sometimes
Pall Mall.
Your factory did not push out you the exact way that you could have been
Fair.
Optimal.
Yeah.
So that means sometimes there might be some synapses that aren't firing in yes. your brain. In the same way, my pancreas is like, can't do the insulin.
Right.
Can't do it. So I don't feel a stigma about taking my metformin to make sure that I have the proper glucose balance in my body. So why should someone feel crazy or weird about taking a pill that helps the balance in their head?
I mean, they shouldn't.
They shouldn't. You shouldn't. It's there to help you. Get the help.
You know, listen, there's side effects and, yeah. you know.
Yeah, but you find the right dosage that works for you.
You have to be committed to you.
Right.
You have to be committed to like, I want to experience joy.
Yes.
So I need to take pathways to that. And
right.
it's a maze.
Right.
So sometimes I'm going to hit a wall and I got to come back and try a different route,
right.
et cetera. You know, and I think that's the thing that when we talk about kindness to yourself, you have to have the willingness to give yourself the grace that I might hit a wall and
right.
have to come back.
And it's okay.
And it's okay. It's not a fail.
It's okay. It's not a fail. I think life is hard. And I think the reason that this is something that hit me recently, maybe in the last 5 or 6 years, we spend our whole lives thinking that life is about joy and flowers and whatever. Life is about loss and toughness, right? There's going to be more
yeah.
mountains to climb, more valley moments than top of the mountain moments.
Mountain.
Right. And I think if you walk through life believing that and understanding that, then when you get your teeth kicked in, it's not the most devastating thing ever because you're not that you're expecting it to be hard, but you're aware that it's going to be hard. When we're told that it's going to be great, you're going to get out there
yeah.
and life's going to, no, sometimes you're going to break up with people. You're going to lose jobs. You're going to lose friendships. This is what life is. So find your people that you can link arms with that will remind you of how lovely it can be when it's mm-hmm. hard and try to be a soft place for people to land, knowing that everybody is struggling on any given day. That's just
a
part of it.
Soft place. How have you remained that within an industry that tries so hard to harden us?
Because I know who I am and my self-worth never came from this industry. I came in this industry going, I want to do one commercial and one sitcom. I was like, if I do that in Cleveland, people in Cleveland be like, she on a commercial. Like, that's all you need, right? So my ego and my self-worth and my purpose is not tied into what this industry gives me or takes away from me. So I don't have to elbow people and shank people and lie on people and stab people in the back. I always said when I entered, the moment I have to go forward without Jesus, I ain't going forward. Mm. If I got to change who I am or do someone dirty to get ahead, may I not get the show or the movie or the commercial or whatever. I don't want this more than I want to be a decent person. Mm-hmm. That is most important to me. When I die, whenever that is, I want people to speak kindly of me. I want people to be like, that Yvette was all right with me. You know what I'm saying? I want my name to be sweet on people's tongue. I don't want people to be like, that Yvette. No. So every single day, I endeavor to be the kind of person that if I were to die that day, it'd be people crying instead of rejoicing.
Now, what do you say in response to, because as sweet as you are, again, you will kick people in the neck when they come sideways, like on
they
the internet.
Absolutely.
On the internet.
Absolutely.
So for people who might be like, well, that's not kind, frame that for people.
Well, I recently, and I'm going to say a name, drop a name, I went back and forth with Eddie Glott online.
Really?
Oh, it was like 3 or 4 days. It was an opus, and I will go in again.
With Eddie?
Yes. My issue with Eddie is this. When he had the opportunity to encourage people to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
He said that he was going to leave the presidential spot empty because he said he was in a safe space, a safe city, and didn't matter. When that black man knows,
Dr. Glott,
and Eddie, that black man knows that it's important for every black person to show up and vote Democratic, especially that year because of what we were facing.
Particularly that year.
Right?
Yeah.
So now he's on television talking about how far we've fallen. He can't believe that we're in such a bad place as a nation. And that Donald Trump, you want to talk about Donald Trump?
Do you want to hear the irony real quick? Remember that clip we played at the beginning?
Yeah.
When Eddie was on the podcast, it was to talk about his book about James Baldwin.
Look at my face, everybody.
You got to go to the YouTube, Amanda Seals TV, to see her face.
Let me tell you something. Dang. Let me tell you something about it. The thing that annoys me about it. How dare you take a stance that will hurt black people ultimately and women ultimately, and then get up and try to say, oh, we've let each other down. No, sir.
Did he take any accountability?
Absolutely not. First, he called me ridiculous. Then he said, if I would read a book, why do that?
Why do you do that?
He said, if I would read a book, I think, but what he meant was if I would read his book. Because what I said to him was, sir, every time you go on television to speak, the first thing you should say is, don't be like me. I made a terrible mistake in 2016. Learn from my mistake. Every hen in the hen house, show up and vote Democratic because we're about to lose our democracy.
Bernie's doing kind of thing.
Well, that's
kind of.
But this is my thing. If you do that, you lose nothing, sir. You still get to be the smartest person in the room because you've shown that you've learned. But as long as you keep making excuses for that idiotic stance you took.
That wasn't sharp.
You get the gas face from me. I don't care.
Can we get an example of the gas face?
Mm-hmm.
There it is.
I don't care what he thinks of me. I don't care what he thinks of me speaking up about him. And I'm going to tap back in.
Wait.
I'm going to tap back in.
That's like, when I die, I don't care if you're not crying.
I don't care.
I don't care.
Let me tell you
crying.
Something. Anybody, listen, the racists should be celebrating when I die. The idiotic black people to take bad stances to tell black people not to vote, y'all should be rejoicing because I'm going to keep a boot on your neck until Jesus calls me home. This is very important. Voting is important. Black people voting is important. And we need to all vote Democratic right now. You don't got to like the person. We've seen what these doggone Republicans have been doing. This is the indignation you feel. This is kindness and love because I care about our country. I care about our democracy and I care about black people. So anybody that comes against those things, you getting it.
Well, you know, then you have people who feel like, well, the Democrats need to earn our vote. And
idiots.
You're not. Okay, here's the thing. You have to stop looking at the process that we're in right now as a personal process.
Come on. Come on.
We are not voting for a person. We're voting for a path forward.
That's right.
And at this juncture,
in
the comprehensive view of where we are, this is unfortunately where we are. And there's how things should be and how things are. But we can't get to how they should be without doing the right move strategically in the R scenario.
And if you don't like it, the time to fight for your candidate and a change is the day after the election. You got 4 years to celebrate and support whoever you want. But they always come about 18 months before an election.
The 18th hour, yeah.
No, this is where the Cornel West and the third party, Robert Kennedy, RFK,
Tony
you know
Starks.
You know what I'm talking about. Tony Thumb on Iron Man. Y'all know what I'm talking about. They come at the time when it's not playtime. Let's not talk about what the Democrats could do now.
Have we been hearing about Cornell running for office since Biden was elected?
Nope. He didn't start this mess, this hot mess.
Because we had Marianne Williamson on here.
You did?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very unimpressed. I was very unimpressed.
Listen.
Here's the thing. People have ideas, right? Ideas, ideologies, but they don't have plans. And they don't have insightful ways to make the system that's already in place either work for them or ways that they can actively dismantle the system.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm not saying that they should come out here and be like, well, here's how I'm going to do it. Because, of course, if you do that, you know, you're showing all your cards. But I also feel like it's a lot of lack of vision.
Yeah.
And more so delusion.
And also.
Of grandeur.
And also.
Grandeur.
You go start at president. Can you start as an alderman, a city? Can you go to Congress? You gonna come up with and say you want to be president?
I know.
Cornell.
Nobody came to see you, Otis.
Nobody came to see you, Otis. Doggone it. It'll make me so mad, I don't know what to do. But this is the thing. This is the thing, though. This comes from my love for people.
She's like, but this is the kindness.
This is
no,
the thing.
You're talking to somebody
know,
who gets it.
Man.
Because for years, people have been like, Amanda Seales is mean based on...
You're passionate. There's a difference between mean and passionate. You care.
I really do.
You care. And this is the thing. When we get like this, they think we're the angry black woman. No, I'm passionate about this shit.
I literally have shirts that say I'm not hostile. I'm just passionate.
Passionate. And you know, I ain't never had a problem with you.
Ditto.
Never. I've enjoyed your shenanigans.
Shenanies.
All of them.
Well, you know, it's very, you know, real recognize real.
Absolutely.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, black media is really its own unique space because the black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping black people out of spaces of equity, we know that black media has to be on top of that. We know that black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be black today, told from a unique black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of black stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. The other part of it is that I feel like what we are often doing is trying to convince people to love themselves and make choices and make choices that are rational and logical. And then we get yelled at or we get people dismissed because they're like, well, you don't tell me what to do. And it's like, I feel so lucky that I have been guided and informed by people who knew what the fuck they were talking about.
And I don't mind someone telling me what to do if they know what they're talking
about. But we have blue checks, and so we can't know what we're talking about. Because that's the other thing they love to say. Like, stop listening to celebrities. They don't know what they're talking about. And it's like, okay, well, Ice Cube doesn't know what he's talking about. But
I think there's a certain point. And forgive me, it's almost like a certain point.
I know that they're like, I thought this was side effects of kindness.
It is. It is. Guys, listen. It is.
We're going to digress.
We're going to be together and get political because that's what we do. But I believe there's a certain point. I don't know what that number is where rich people, rich Black people stop being Black. And they just flip to being rich people. Mm. And I feel like that's what we're finding whenever it's time for an election and people start trotting out, you should go with the Republicans or Donald Trump. It's always people that are no longer in touch with what the struggle is because they know that their money, to a certain extent, is going to shield them from the stuff that other Black people are going to endure under this person. If you're rich and Black, do your kids need affirmative action to get into Harvard or anywhere else? At a certain point, no, they don't, because you will... You're that person and you're going to be like, this is my baby, and they're going to get in. The other brilliant minds like a Joyanne Reed before she was Joyanne Reed, who had those grades and deserved to be at Harvard, those babies are now no longer going to get that opportunity because people have chosen the Republican way and we got the Supreme Court now that just doesn't care about people. So I am frustrated at a level I can't even put into words. Like I had to, in the last couple of weeks, I was like, let me just stay off of the news. Let me just take a break from watching it because I get so angry, righteously angry, that people don't care more about other people. At a certain point, it has to stop being about just you and your stuff and your house and your kids. You have to care about the greater good. Because if you don't care about climate change, where your baby's going to live? Because it's going to keep getting hotter. You okay with your grandbabies on fire? Mm-hmm. Apparently they are.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. It's why is money more important than people? Profits over people, power over people. That's not how it's supposed to be. We're supposed to care about each other and help each other, even sacrificially. Like going back to the school board votes. Yes, take more of my taxes if it's going to help these babies learn what they need to learn.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? How much money do you need?
I feel like there's just a real disconnect from what you said in terms of like, we should be caring about people, right? The human in humanity is lost.
Absolutely.
And there's a practice that has to be put in place. And I really genuinely be telling people like, challenge yourself to try and make someone's day every day.
It's so easy.
And
it's so easy.
Especially if you like leave the house.
It's
like,
so easy.
It's out there. You know,
like the easiest way, Amanda, is just compliment somebody's outfit.
That's it.
Okay, polka dots.
I gave you the tool.
They come out. Everybody that's out, especially if it's someone that's in something interesting or stylish, they thought about it. Mm-hmm. They were like, I'm gonna put this pin right here. I'm about to give them this bow tie. Wait till they see these suspenders, whatever they're working with, this hat. Fascinator tilt to the side. Whatever it is, that person looked in the mirror and said, I'm going to take this out in the world. And they might have felt a little nervous about it because it is a bow tie with suspenders and a fascinator and a pin. And when you see them, I see you wearing them suspenders. I see them suspenders.
Okay, tilted hat.
Okay, fascinator. You will make their whole countenance changes. It's the simplest thing.
Let me tell y'all, something even as basic as like when you go to somewhere like Trader Joe's and they're like, you know, how are you doing? How's your day? Throw it back to the person.
How's your day?
How's your day?
How you doing?
Most people who are doing customer service, like that's not even typical. Like people aren't asking about their day.
And call them by the name. They got this on Raul the other day. I said, Raul, how you doing, man? You know, if somebody's bagging the mess out of my groceries, I'd be like, you bagging the mess out of them groceries. You packing that like Tetris. You better go and make that milk and them eggs. Say, I give everybody compliments because it's the easiest thing. And if they're doing a great job or they look nice, tell them.
But here's the thing. If you're listening, you're like, I don't know. I'm an introvert.
I'm an introvert.
I don't know how I can do that.
You know I'm an introvert, right?
Yes. I will tell you this. It does still serve you. Like, I feel like even the selfish people are like, I could never. And it's like, well, it does still serve you because it gives you endorphins. There's connectivity there. There's just a joy space that happens.
Absolutely.
And I, as somebody who is, I'm going through a transformation where I feel like I'm getting to be just more comfortable in my soft self. Mm-hmm. And so it feels a lot easier to do that.
Why do you feel like you couldn't show your soft self before or live in that space?
Well, for a long time, I wasn't around people that were soft. Mm-hmm. So they also were like throwing things at me that I felt like I needed to like combat.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to combat them in a soft way without being walked over.
Do you feel soft with me?
Of course. Yeah. But we're not, you know, you didn't even come with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, like when I started in this business when I was 8.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been dealing with like funny style people even before I really knew what that meant.
What that meant, yeah.
Then I was in New York and I'm having to fend for myself and—
Your life.
And my life. And I don't think I had a lot of people around me who could be kind to me about how I may be misrepresenting myself, right? Mm. Or how I may be, you know, saying things in a way that I don't even realize. And I come from a household, like my mom has a very sharp tongue. Grenadians as a whole are very like witty, mm-hmm. And can be very snide and snarky. And so I feel like I also just, I didn't come from like a soft home.
Right.
I just didn't, you know, then I was a gymnast. So I was getting yelled at all the time there. And then I was in theater and my theater.
This is what's funny though. I always saw soft in you, even in the midst of whatever something was, I always saw because what I always thought about you was the reason you were fighting the power so much is because there was something in you that said it shouldn't be this way. It should be better.
Right.
And you can only believe that it can be better if there's a softness in you, because otherwise you're bitter and hateful and think this is just what it is. But you never move through like this is just what it is. You move through life like it shouldn't be this way. That comes from softness. So that's what I always saw in you from the first day we met. I was just like, I don't know. I just felt like I got it. I get it. And my prayer for you had always been, that you would feel safe enough to let that out. Because this is a treacherous business. This is a treacherous city. And you have to believe that it's okay to let that out. Because again, as we started, they see kindness or softness as weakness instead of seeing it the way it really is, which is actually strength. To go out into this world or this industry, soft or kind is strength.
Yeah.
And I wanted that for you because I always could see what God had for you and where he was taking you. And I wanted you to be able to lean into that and be able to just it's almost like in The Wiz at the very end when Evelyn is, and they unzip themselves and had these cratchy.
Then
they unzipped and they were Alvin and they danced.
Brand new day.
So I felt like that was you. You were in there doing the work, right? Evelyn is over you. And then finally you got to unzip and come out.
You better know me and say it to my on my podcast.
I'm just saying. I knew it was in there.
That really is an eye-opening assessment of just like, you knew that I wanted something better, like for us. And so that came from a soft place. That's fascinating because I can absolutely say that not just the men I've dated, but that there are people around me where they didn't think that there could be something better. And those people inevitably have always ended up being very hardened, dark people that I had to create boundaries and distance from.
You
because they would look at me like, why are you like always trying to make change? Like, this is just what it is.
No, it can always be better. That's what faith is, believing that it can always be better. And I've had some friends in the past that were very mean or heavy. And sometimes I would feel like, this person
heavy,
like this person's my assignment. Like I'm supposed to come in because I'm light. So I'm supposed to come in and help them navigate this season of time where they feel like there's not enough, or they feel like life is hard, or they feel like everybody's out to get them. But then I realized that not everybody is trying to be better, and not everybody has the capacity to unzip.
You really think they don't have the capacity?
I do think that there's some that just, they've decided.
This is the story.
They've decided that they are going to be wretched. They've decided that it serves them, or they've decided that it's safer. Or they've abandoned. Like they got tired of dreaming and believing that it was going to get better. They believe that time is running out or there's not enough to go around. Like that's the biggest lie that this industry tells Black women is that there's not enough to go around. And so that makes you move through life like, you know, because you're clawing your way. And my thing is, and I have two thoughts about it. One, there is enough to go around. But second, what it's offering is not even worth my soul. Like whatever this industry will give me, if I step on everybody's back, it's not worth stepping on everybody's back. I don't want to destroy others to rise. I don't. There's not enough money. There's not enough opportunity in the world where I want to hurt someone to get there.
The values don't even add up to me.
They don't. You got to just, what does it profit a man to gain the world but lose his soul? I believe that. I could win an Oscar, but if I got to stab you in the back, kick somebody in the chest to get it, what is this trophy? Why? You know what I'm saying? If I can't get it by being good, come on.
He who robs me of my good name robs me of that which not enriches him, but makes me poor indeed.
Absolutely.
Othello.
Absolutely. And this is the thing too, talking about your good name. That's the, if you ever see me fight for myself.
I was like,
East Cleveland.
If you ever see these hands, jump in.
No. But like, if you ever see me online, like riling up and it's in regards to me, it's because somebody came for my name. I don't play about my reputation or my good name. I'm a decent person. I'm a good person. I love people. So
the
anybody,
Disney shit.
Oh man, anybody comes crazy to me about who I am as a human being, how I move, we gonna box. You call me fat, call me ugly, call me old, call me untalented, call me Z-list.
Okay,
any of that stuff. I don't care.
I don't care.
But
don't do it.
Do not say that I'm not a good person. Because we gonna box. Verbally. I'm a lover, not a fighter anymore. But we're gonna box.
Not the anymore asterisk.
He's clear. But I'm like, I just don't believe in your good name is all you have. That's all we really have.
It's true.
And especially in this business, because the first thing people do when they're thinking about, should I hire you? What do they like to work with?
I mean, because my name has been besmirched for quite some time based on literally like nothing. Like there's actually no examples of like, oh, Amanda's been difficult. I'm like, chill. Because whenever I ask, give me the receipt. Tell me
what I do.
When?
What did I say?
No one can ever tell me the example. Well, I just heard that. What did they tell you that I did?
That's what I'm saying. You got, listen, when I hear somebody say, I just heard it, what's their name and number? Because
Let's call them. Let's get on the phone.
Because we're not doing this.
Because like at present, I am being somewhat blacklisted.
How do you know?
From comedy clubs. Because I had like a comedy club try to take some shows from me and give them to another comic. And I had already sold tickets. And I also just didn't think that was fair.
So wait, so your tickets you sold, they were going to give to the other person?
No, this my dates.
Okay.
They said, we're going to actually give someone else your dates, even though I had already sold tickets on those dates. And I just, I'm like, well, why is that a thing? Like, I already, these are my dates.
Right.
And they're like, well, we just like this, you know, we just want to do this. And so I told my constituency, I told my fandom. And the support was loud. And the sisters was like, nah, come on now. No. And they made the calls. And so then—
Did you get your dates back?
I got my dates back.
Okay.
But I got my dates back at the forfeit of getting new dates. Because now it's Amanda Seals is difficult. Because I didn't
Let's just describe what difficult is then. So difficult is when you don't let people walk over you?
Correct. So there's a forms. I mean, that's one version of difficult. That's the one that I feel I get plagued with. The other form of difficult is when you just make everything a thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like I need
green M&Ms.
Yes. I need green M&Ms. Right. I don't want pamplemousse LaCroix. I want lime. you know, no, I don't want to wear that because, you know, I know we decided that I could wear that, but you know, no. Like I've seen difficult and I'm like, but difficult. I'm not. That.
Right.
The other thing is like, don't let you have a bad day. Because if you have one bad day, now it's, you know, et cetera. Or don't let somebody have done something wrong and you said, hey, that was not cool.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. This is what, when I've had two experiences with difficult people on set. Only two. There's only two people that I will never work with again.
Okay.
Like, in one of-
Chevy Chase.
Who?
So that's one.
I don't know. Who? So I decided that before I get any job, I will Google the person's name an asshole or diva, right? To see.
Okay.
Because if it populates, then you know.
Okay.
Right? And what I've found is that the ones that are truly vile, everyone knows they're truly vile. The ones that ran afoul of one or two people, you can tell that it's a personality issue. Because everybody don't like everybody. Everybody
no.
Everybody, some people oil and water, that is fine, you know? But it does not stick and color your entire persona because that's not who you are. So somebody could have a beef with you. Like, we all have beef. Like, me and Eddie Glaude, we ain't gonna never. We ain't gonna.
Okay.
Never.
All right.
Right? So Eddie has probably nothing kind to say about me. And that's okay.
I just find this so shocking.
Is it shocking? Go on Twitter and see. We lit him up for a couple of days.
Why was he acting like that?
He was on fire. And this is the thing. He did it to himself. Because when he came back with the "you should read a book," everybody was like, "you tell a black woman with college degree she should read a book." Because he felt ashamed. And
Dr.
you Glaude, should be ashamed.
Dr. Glaude, I expect more of you from that. That seems very unbecoming of your character. And from what I've experienced of your intellect and of your merit. So I want to send a message out to Dr. Eddie Glaude, who has been on this show, who has also been on Smart, Funny, and Black when we were at Princeton with Imani Perry. I would just like to send a message out that I hope you will consider, you know, addressing this in a more elevated and high vibrational way, because that's what I have come to know you as. And this representation seems very just untoward.
I believe that Eddie Glaude did not appreciate me telling what he did.
Okay.
And I think that he
spoke to him.
Because he wanted...
It brought the dark part out.
Yes,
that's like,
because he wanted to appear to be smarter than all of us. When he made the decision, he was taking his stand, and he was not thinking of the greater good when he took that stand. That is the only thing I said. And when I gave him advice, and I'm allowed to give you advice, Eddie, I'm old too, I can give you advice. The advice I gave him was to use the mistake he made
to teach.
For a teaching moment.
Yeah.
If the great Eddie Glaude says, "don't be like me,"
that's a beautiful opportunity to teach.
Everybody's like, "Eddie Glaude is so smart. What Eddie don't make no mistakes. What Eddie do?" And then to find out that I did not value my vote, and in not valuing my vote, I encourage other people to not value their vote. And in doing that, a monster got in because enough people did not care about not voting for that dude.
We have to be able to, especially as scholars, we have to be able to look at the past and not just the past, but our past.
Our past. And this is the thing too. This is what I will extend to him. If he felt that strong about it and wanted to take a stand, take the stand, Eddie. Why are you telling people you're taking the stand? Just take the stand. Nobody knows what's going on when you get in that voting booth. Just leave it blank for you. And you feel like you're in a safe city and ain't nobody, it's not going to hurt Hillary Clinton or the country if you personally don't vote for her, fine. He did a television tour. He was talking about it on television, telling people, "I'm going to leave it because I'm in." Then that made other people go, "well, I don't have to vote for her either then, because the great Eddie Glaude ain't voting for her." It was really very dangerous. And my thing is, be that dude, but do not come 4 or 5, 8 years later talking about, "oh, the world is crazy." Yeah, it is, Eddie. Yeah, it is. It is. So don't talk about how far we've fallen. Talk about how you fell and how you know better now.
Well, it was unkind to say read a book. That was very unkind.
Oh, yeah. You also said I was ridiculous. I'm not ridiculous. And I do read. But then because I'm also petty. I'm very petty. I'm very petty.
Wait, are you saying yourself that you are very petty?
I'm very petty. So I did.
Okay, but can there be kindness and pettiness?
Absolutely.
Tell me how.
Let me tell you how. Because, again, it's all about the greater good.
Okay.
Right? And so since Eddie...
Another Mac-ism is ain't no wrong reason to do right.
Listen, so since Eddie refused to accept that he had done wrong and understand what I was trying to say, and then he insulted me 3 times. I think he said I was silly. He said I was ridiculous. And he said I need to read a book. So there was 3 things that he said. So I found a way to get that in as many times as I could. And every time I jabbed him, I said, "so you thought I couldn't read." And just
that's
read you.
That's the
I
petty.
Just read you, Eddie.
That's the penny.
So I'm going to stay there. We can do this. Because the thing is, my ego's not attached to it. And I believe in good trouble. John Lewis said, get in good trouble. This is some good trouble. If it's going to lead to people understanding that your vote counts, this is some good trouble.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
What does kill 'em with kindness mean to you?
In my mind...
And is it something that you practice?
In my mind, it's do not let jerks get you off your square. So the two people that I will never work with again, neither one of them can say that I cussed them out. Neither one of them can say that I was unkind to them. Now, the second one, I had a moment where I had to step to baby girl because she was making the set experience for other people uncomfortable.
Difficult.
And you trying to get people fired and you doing stuff like that.
Oh, that's who I thought.
Yeah, we don't do that. We're not going to use this experience, this blessing for all of us and turn it into a nightmare because you have ego issues.
Aww.
So I had to step in and say, listen here, precious. Now, mama love the baby, sort of. She sort of. We don't do that here. I don't know where you did that or where that worked, but this doesn't work here. So we're going to come
did
here.
Did she receive it?
I don't know what the girl received, but she stopped the shenanigans on set.
That's what I mean.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because the understanding was it doesn't fly here. I don't know where you've been flying on your little broomstick, but it don't fly.
But you, that doesn't sound to me like you came to her in an unkind way. Like
you just came
to her directly. And I really feel like often being direct gets mislabeled as unkind.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, I didn't go, listen here, bitch. I didn't come like that.
I said, more than direct.
I said, precious. Dazzling diamond.
Mm-hmm. Dazzling
what
diamond.
What pain you must be.
Yeah.
Tabitha Brown. What pain? Because the thing is, when people are acting up at that level, they're really wounded.
Yes.
Right? And if I have a heart for you, I'm going to spend some time helping you get what you need so that you don't feel so afraid that you have to be so hateful all the time. But if I realize, which I realize with this one, that you like being hateful, like you get a perverse joy.
That's that chemical release. I'm telling you.
We don't do that.
They were bullied.
No.
And now they're bullying.
No, we don't do that.
Because that's how they were like.
Well, listen.
There needs to be like EMDR, like real strict therapy.
Go to therapy and get some meds. Do not bring that here. We're not, this whole experience for everybody else is not going to be damaged because you're damaged. So do whatever you have to do to be okay. You want to cry? Come on, cry. Get out.
Yeah.
But don't bring that mess here. We got 16 hours to be together. Don't do that mess here. Don't do that mess here.
What's a time in this business where, or just any time, where you feel like someone was surprisingly kind to you?
So many examples. With the exception of those two people, every single set I've walked on, it's been a joy. You know what I mean? Even here today, it's been a lovely experience for me.
Welcome.
Everybody all together. Jordy met me at the door. You know, so it's but this is the thing. That's what I expect. There's this proverb or story. There was a man, two men sitting at a crossroads, right? Two streets, two ways. And somebody walked up and said, "What's it like up the street? You know, place I came from, people were horrible, hateful, nasty, mean people, just whatever." And the guy said, "Hey, hate to tell you, that's exactly what you're going to find up the road." Next person came up, "What's it like up the road? Where I come from, everybody's loving and kind and they treat everybody good. Well, that's exactly what you're going to find up the road. Good for you." And the other guy's like, "Well, they're going to the same place. You find what you see and seek and believe." So when I go somewhere, I don't think about how is this going to be horrible or how is this going to be drudgery. Every time I leave my house, I'm like, what amazing thing is going to happen today?
Ooh.
What are me and Amanda going to talk about?
I can't wait
to be in that pink room. Like, my mind is that. I'm believing that something wonderful is going to happen every day. And that's exactly what I see and I find. So when I see someone that's in the space where they can't see beyond it, it's like, "Well, precious, what are we going to talk about? What's going on with you? We'll talk about it."
Yeah.
You know, and then you can tell in that moment, because if you genuinely open yourself up and they know that it's safe, if it is something inside, they'll let it out. And then they can build another pathway for themselves.
Or if it's the woman that was helping me at Nando's in D.C.
I can't wait to hear this. What did she do?
I said, "How's your day going?" Because the furrowed brow had been maintained for a strong 15 minutes.
Absolutely.
And she was very bothered by me changing tables. And I said, "Hi,
Precious, what is happening?
How's your day?"
And she said,
"My day fine. I just look like this every day." And I was like, "All right, in which case, I will have the chicken with the peri-peri sauce.
That's just your face.
That's just her face, yeah.
Oh, Precious. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
But I know that that's not just her face.
It wasn't just her face.
Because I'm just like, ooh, I could see your laugh. I could see your smile, but you just annoyed right now." She said, "I'm moving around. I move around fast. I got a lot going on. I'm moving around." And I was like, okay.
Okay. Let me get that chicken.
Let me get that chicken. But, you know, that has been something I've over time been able to be better at, is being letting the kindness show in other ways. Like, I feel like I've always been a kind person, but there was a block from that being able to be what I was leading with.
Right.
And so it was something that I knew about myself.
But you didn't think it was safe.
I didn't think it was safe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I also had the tools to even express it like in like a genuine way in that way. Like, I've always been a kind person in the sense that, like, I'ma help you carry up that stroller up them stairs.
Absolutely.
I'm holding the door. Don't let this pregnant lady be standing while we on this train.
That's right.
Cause I will absolutely be like, "If y'all don't get up so she can sit down," you know, like, and I feel like that. So, like, my kindness kind of always came out in terms of, like, being, like, the warrior
for
people.
Very violent.
It's New York. You know? But it took building boundaries.
Yes.
In order for me to be able to start living in the kindness in a safe way.
Right.
And so, to your point, I didn't feel safe, but I also didn't know how to create boundaries without feeling unkind.
Right.
Because that's the other part about the building of the boundaries, is that then you feel like, "I built a boundary and it was unkind for me to have a boundary with this person."
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to get over that.
Yeah, because listen, it always goes back to put your oxygen mask on first, right? And so if someone is running roughshod over you or running roughshod over your time or not respecting who you are, you have every right to go, "Hey, Precious, Dazzling Diamond. We got to not. That kind of makes me feel crazy when you do that. And I want our friendship to be able to continue. So I need you to pump your brakes in that area." And the person either will rise to the occasion and go, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it." Or if their ego's tied up in it, then they're gonna buck.
Yep.
And that's okay, because now you've shown me you're not safe.
Correct.
This is not going to be a good lasting friendship.
Correct.
And that's fine. I'm going to release you. I'm going to release you like a dove into
and feel good.
Feel totally fine about it.
That's the thing I think stops a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because also boundaries can also kind of buck back at you.
Yeah.
right? Because some people, when you build that boundary, mm-hmm. then they're like, how dare you? I can't believe you would do that. That's so terrible of you. I mean, I've been going through that with my mom for months.
Yeah.
Where she's just like acting an ass.
Yeah.
You know, because a boundary was built. And it's like, well, the boundary don't got to be here, but you are literally informing the boundary
yes.
with this behavior. So when you want to shift this, the boundary will shift. Mm-hmm. And that is how it can work. I mean, I feel like there's just a choice that you've made to carry forth kindness and to demand it of others.
Yeah.
Shamelessly.
Yeah. You know, I like people. And I think people are delicious. I think they're just wonderful. I just think they're wonderful. And I think that we're all our 8-year-old selves or our 6-year-old selves in these adult bodies. And some of us need a nap. Some of us didn't get the carrots or the PB&J.
Right.
Like these are just little baby tantrums that everybody's having. And when you see the child, right? Because mm-hmm. you wouldn't talk to a little child. Would you tell you? You need a nap. What you need? You know what I mean? And even if you comment them like that, something inside of them just kind of goes, oh, wow, I was a little crazy.
Yes.
Right then. You're a little tired. It's okay. You know?
It's all right, sweetheart.
Right, it's okay, babe. So I feel like it's for me, I've always been outward facing. I've always wanted everybody to be okay. And I've always wanted to be used however God wanted to use me, wherever he puts me. And so that's how I move. But the thing is, people forget Jesus flipped tables, right?
People really forget this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People really act like Jesus was just out here hanging out. They also act like Martin Luther King was literally just, you know.
They really do. Just kind. This is the thing. It's like there are moments when even the kind people have to speak up and fight the good fight. And so there's nothing wrong with being a kind person that also will, you know, kick somebody in the shins when they need it. Because otherwise you're ineffective. Just being kind and not speaking up when something's wrong, what are you good for? You have to use your platform for good. Mm-hmm. And that means sometimes you got to call people on the carpet. Now, going back to Eddie Glaude one more time, if he were to want to talk to me about it, I would be totally open to talking about it. Like it's not, because I don't think he understood where I was coming from. And then once he insulted me, I didn't care where he was coming from.
Do you have a connection to him outside of social media?
Mm-mm.
So do you feel like there may have been this feeling like, oh, she's calling me out instead of calling me in?
I think that he believed that I had no right to have anything to say to him at all. I think that he didn't. I think he was like, who is this chick? Just basically lighting me up. But this is the thing that I want to make very clear. I was not alone. When I tell you it was 3 days, at a certain point, I'm like, he's dead, guys. Like, the body is, like, I started to feel bad for him at a certain point because people were piling on so much, but they were piling on righteously. It was the same. Nobody was talking about him personally. Nobody was like, well, you got them blue glasses on. Like, nobody was coming for him personally. It was literally what he said and what he did and how he's trying to now act as if.
Well, tell me this, because we're here.
Yeah.
What is the shift that he said?
What do you mean?
Like, so you said now he's acting as if. So what is he doing now?
Well, he's acting as if he has no idea how we got here. When the bottom line is we got here because not enough people voted for Hillary Clinton in certain states. That's how we got here. We got here because we were faced with the most qualified person ever run for president and the least qualified person ever run for president. And people thought because they didn't like the lady, they couldn't vote for the lady. 53% of white women coming for you. So the whole point is this idea that it's some mystery how our democracy is
crumbling before our eyes.
Or how there's 6-3 on the Supreme Court. How did this happen? You know how it happened. And sir, you have a hand in it. And that's all I said.
Okay.
That's all I said.
Did he express that he's operating differently this go round?
I never heard him say that. I heard him say that in his book that I did not read and will not read, that he apologized in that book.
Oh.
And that I should read that book. And I said, a lot of people ain't going to read that book, but a lot of people watch you on MSNBC. So I'm saying when you're on MSNBC, before you start speaking about how far we've fallen, talk about the mistake you made and encourage people not to be like you every time.
Okay, well, I know what message to say when I see Dr. Glaude, because the way my life works is
You see
I'm going to end up running into Dr. Bob.
He's going to have something to say about me. I don't care what Eddie say about me either. I don't care what Eddie has to
You know, and listen, everyone knows the kind of person I am, so I absolutely am going to say, now you know that you owe this lovely lady, this kind woman, an apology. So there's one. And well, two. So just know that I'm going to say that. Because some people don't like when people stick up for them. I am a stick upper.
I am too. You know I am.
I know. Some people don't like that. I lost what I thought was a friend for sticking up for her.
Hmm.
Because she was like, I understand because it can feel like an invasion of privacy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is public. It don't matter.
So, you know, it was like she had told me like, oh, this person got at me sideways. Yeah. And then when I was with that person and that person like mentioned her, I was like, well, don't remember when you was in sideways? And she felt like that was not my place to say. So, you know, that was her preference, and I respected that. Now, if the roles were reversed, and
speak
that,
up for me.
Listen.
Ma'am, speak up for me.
If I hear that you was there.
Let me hear. Let me tell you something. I'm such a big speaker upper. When somebody says something about my friend, I don't even have to tell my friend somebody says something because I handle it.
That's my point.
Let me tell you what you're not going to do.
What you're not.
Let me.
I need to know. Like, I've had friendships end because it was like.
What'd you say? When they said it, I know you telling me what they said. What'd you say when they said it? Well, you know, I ain't want to get involved. But you listened.
But you listened.
You listened.
I don't even want to feel like you the type of person where if they was talking about me, you wouldn't stop it.
You better stop it. I stop it. If somebody talking crazy about one of my friends, I'd be like, hey.
Don't.
No.
You better put that in your group chat.
Don't do it in front of me. Let me tell you about her character because you seem like you
exactly.
don't know
and that's
who
the next
she
part.
Is. Let me tell you who
Let
she is.
Let me tell you. I have a homegirl. Shout out to Suhaila. My
Say
home
it
girl,
again.
Shout out to Suhaila.
Suhaila. That's a pretty name.
Because I want to give an example of how you can, you know, stand up for somebody and let that kindness resonate in a real way. She was on a call representing me in a marketing space. Mm-hmm. And she was on a call with three execs, okay? And the executives were talking about doing work with me. And the one sister in the room said, well, we heard that she's difficult. And at that moment, Suhaila could have done one of two things because in representation, right? A lot of times people choose to go the, well, let me appease this person route.
Well, she's better now or she used to be, but she's-
But it qualifies it.
Absolutely.
And so instead though, Suhaila said, she didn't even ask for an example. She said, how do you feel like that brings value to this conversation? Then she said, have you ever echoed those thoughts about a man? And there was silence in both ways, in both cases, both questions. And she said, so the issue here is we're talking about working together in a capacity. And does Amanda meet the criteria of the capacity?
Right.
And she does. So when you bring in things like she's quote unquote difficult to work with, what value does that bring to the conversation? Because what we've identified here is that she meets the criteria of the capacity, and that's all that really should be conversed. Mm. And for the record, she's not difficult. And that's when now we're going, and she's also not difficult to work with. But when you come in, remember how you said when you come down the street and you like, is it nasty up there?
Yeah.
So if you're coming into it with
expecting
that mindset,
it, that's right.
That's what you're going
to
get.
That's what you're going to get.
But that was a scenario where I felt so full because, you know, but that's the type of person I am. So of course, if I see Dr. Gloud, I'm going to be like, now, Dr. Gloud, now, come on now, player.
You tell a black woman she need to read.
Well, we actually are the number one most well-read.
I mean, that's when he lost me.
Most books. But I just think at the end of the day, the most important thing about this particular incident is that all the smart blacks have to be together.
Yeah.
We really have to be working in unison and we don't have to agree on everything, but we do have to understand the goal. We have to agree on the goal.
Absolutely.
And we have to also realize that like there's going to be pathways to that goal that aren't necessarily as exciting for all of us.
Right.
But that we got to understand with our critical
Where
thinking
we're
and
trying
logic.
To get. I don't
so
have
So like
to.
When people are like, "Oh, you love Biden." Of course I don't love Biden. But I know that's where we at.
I like Biden. I love Kamala.
I don't love Kamala. I mean, what's to love?
I'm AKA.
Oh, well, you got to do that.
Not just that. I think she's done a great job. I enjoy her. I do.
I think she's a nice gal. For all intents and purposes, I will say this. I think for a lot of us, she
was utilized to be to push the presidency forward in a way that many vice presidents in the past have not been. Right. So she was very specifically positioned as like a that we're going to add some robustness to this presidency. Now, I'm not on the inside, so I don't know what the breakdown was from the inside. But ultimately, I think this was a time for the vice president to be utilized in a far more engaging way. And she was not. And so now here we are and we're still fighting voter apathy.
Yeah, but I think
in ways that like we just didn't. We could have fought. And I don't know that that's her fault.
No, I don't think it is. And I might be biased because, you know, I'm an AK. But I'm also smart and I'm sorority stuff aside. She's doing more than anyone knows she's doing because it's 24 hours indictment watch with Donald Trump. Same thing for Biden. I think that they have done a lot of good things. Like the infrastructure. I did a documentary about infrastructure probably 5 years ago. I've been clanging the bell about we need to fix our bridges and our roads. And,
okay, yeah.
And so the fact that we've got, yeah, so the fact that we have an infrastructure bill now that is literally rebuilding America is everything. The student loan forgiveness is everything. There is more that they've done and could have done more had more people voted and we could have had the House.
The House, yeah.
There is, they could have done all of it, right? So understanding how civics works and understanding how each of the three, you know, parts of government work, I know that we can't blame him or Kamala for the things that they weren't able to do. And I think that if we had a media that cared more about democracy than ratings, we would spend more time talking about the good that Biden and Harris have done. So that's where I stand on
it. I would have liked her to have better, I feel like her talking points have not been very strong in many cases over this presidency. And that's where some of my frustration has been. Like, I think there could have been a better showing. And I feel like her language shifted once she...
I think it's shifting now, too. I feel like what we'll see through the end of this year and all next year is going to be different. I think she's going to be pushed more to the forefront.
I hope so.
Which I think is going to be really great because I think young people are excited about her and I'm excited about
her. You do?
I do. I believe that.
You think young people are excited about Kamala Harris?
I really do. I think they are. I think they're more excited about
her
than even Biden, I think. I think if they had to pick who they liked, who they're more excited about between the two of them, I think they would say her.
I have not seen that reflected in my interactions, but I'm going to pose that. I'm going to actually make a direct query.
Please do.
Because I'm curious.
Yeah.
Speaking of queries.
Questions.
It's time for us to go to the Patreon. All right. It's time for us to go to the Patreon. And the SEAL Squad is going to ask the questions and see. Well, anybody can ask the questions, but only the SEAL Squad gets to see the answers.
Why do you look so tall?
Because I'm sitting on a cushion because I have hip dysplasia and a bad lower back.
How tall are you?
5'6".
You are tall. I'm 5'2".
Okay.
Go on.
That's part of it too. We'll be over there. Hope to see you there. Go to theamandaverse.com.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
The last dose.
There y'all have it. Well, Ms. Nicole Brown, I wanna thank you.
Did you make my, you hyphenated my middle name? Yes, with my last?
Into the last name.
Mm-hmm. thank you, Ms. Seals. I appreciate you, Ms. Seals.
No, I really appreciate this. It was long overdue. And it's time. It's necessary, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I go to this coffee shop called La La Land, and they wear hats that say, Make America Kind Again.
Yes. Can we try that?
And I feel like one thing I would love for you to leave the people with is just, like, What are some, maybe some like affirmations to walk out the house with to be a part of making the movement to make
yes.
America kind
again? Okay, here, how about this? No one is out to get me. I am enough. No one is out to get me.
No one?
No one. No one. Imagine if you grasp that.
Marjorie like, Taylor Greene?
Nobody. Or let me say this. They may be out to get me, but nobody can get me.
I think that's, yeah, because they out to get
Nobody
us.
Can get me. Nobody can get me. But also, if you just do a little Jedi mind trick and tell yourself nobody's out to get you, that'll totally shift everything. Because as you're moving through life, because we can look at the boogeymen or the troglodytes, cave women like Marjorie Taylor Greene, and that's a big bad, right? But it's really, when you walk out the house and go, nobody's out to get me, that means the person that cuts you off on the freeway ain't out to get you. The person that doesn't let you merge is not out to get you.
You know what came to mind was that Tamika Mallory is in Kentucky and they're telling her, like, she's getting death threats. So, like, people are out to get
her. Yes, but it's a subtle shift. Like, there's the reality of we are Black people in America.
Right.
Okay, that is never going to change.
Correct.
And we are literally going to be fighting for our lives until the Lord calls us home. Now, that's the truth.
Okay, yeah.
But when we're talking about affirmations, these are the things, the little delicious things you tell yourself to be able to make it through
but
the day.
But what if it's a lie?
It's not a lie, though. Because the thing is, the idea that nobody's out to get me, I think it is the better way to say it is no one will get me. Like, no weapon formed against me shall prosper.
There
is the
is.
Better way to say
no
it.
No weapon.
Yeah, but I move through life believing that wherever I go,
I'm just giving you background music. I'm just giving you background music.
It won't work.
Woo!
It
won't work.
Come on, no weapon. Fred Hampton. That whole album is deliciousness, anointedness in that album.
Do you
album.
Follow Fred Hammond on Instagram?
I do.
I'd be like, what are you posting, Fred?
I know. But listen, that Pages of Life, chapters 1 and 2, he can do whatever he wants.
Okay.
Whatever you want. Whatever you're doing, Fred, I'm going to go back, right on back.
But I do think that I feel like that, like, okay, I say that because I had a tough time with affirmations in the beginning because I felt like they felt like lies. And I had to find affirmations
that didn't feel like lies.
Yes.
Do you know that you're enough?
Yes. Yeah. But I had to affirm.
Yeah.
The lies, that wasn't necessarily one of the ones that was felt like a lie, but it just felt like, now you know you don't believe that yet. And so I had to.
Yeah. Okay, but see, that's what affirmation is. It's a thing that you say over and over.
Yes.
Until you.
But they are out to get us. So I can't tell myself
that.
Yeah,
but you know,
because I feel like I don't want to. The reason why I say this only is because I don't want us to lie ourselves into complacency. So it's more so it's like, I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do.
You know what's funny though, Amanda? I don't know why in my mind I'm compartmentalizing it, right? Because when I think of an affirmation, I'm thinking about my space. And again, in Tamika's situation, her space is death threats right now in front of her.
Yeah.
But you and I right now in this moment, and we all get nonsense.
I was going to say.
But there's nobody. Yeah, I get them too. But nobody right now, as far as I know, I ain't checked my email in a while, is actively like, nigga, bitch, die right now. I've gotten those messages, but not right now.
Touché.
Maybe after this airs.
Right.
But it's not happening right now. So I'm saying when I'm brushing my teeth in the morning and I say nobody's out to get me, that is something that resets my mind.
Mm.
As I go out in the world, there may be a different reality that I see that day. But in that moment,
that's what you need
Yeah, it washes over you and you're like, I'm enough. It's okay. Life is opening up to me in beautiful ways that I don't even know. My name is being spoken in ways that will change my trajectory in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
These are the kind of things that you can say. Because the thing is, when we expect negativity, that's not true either, right? It's not. If you believe that somebody's out to get you, or you believe that, you know, there's no opportunities coming for you, or nobody's going to ever love you, these are lies. These are lies too, or things that have not come to fruition yet either. So why not, in this moment, choose to believe that good is on its way and that life can change in beautiful ways for me? There's enough reality that's going to meet us outside the door. While I'm in here, I'm gonna make the picture pretty for me. And I suggest you do it for you.
Hold on. Help is on its way.
Preacher's Wife soundtrack.
It was. I love that soundtrack.
Thank you.